Mondas podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Mondas podcast. Today we've got Toby Haydick talking about his new Edinburgh show, and also got me and Danny Davis are going to be talking about season 15 of Doctor Who.
Hello, I'm Toby Haydock. My website is www.tobyhaydock.com. The name is, however, very stupidly spelled TobyHadoke. www.tobyhaydock.com. And the Twitter handle is Toby Haydock, all one word, TobyHadoke.
Right, and the word on the street is that you're going to be doing another Edinburgh show. Do you want to tell the kids about that?
Oh, Shimon, my homies. yes, I will tell the kids. I will give them the lingo, the word on the street. I'm supposed I've been doing it today. It's on in. I do my first preview a week and a half's time, and I'm on draft 3 of my new show. I'll probably do about 10 or 11 drafts. But I'll probably get 4 or 5 done before the first preview next week, which is just cutting and honing of the follow-up, The Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf. I'm risking sullying its reputation by doing an inadequate sequel. and it's called, like the last one, it's based entirely on true events, and it's called My Stepson Stole My Sonic Screwdriver. And it picks up where Moths left off, and brings us to the present day. And as usual, it's sort of the story of what I've been up to, but told with through the prism and with the umbrella of Doctor Who.
Wow. So are you still planning to do performances of Moths Around the World then, or is that it? Or
Watch this space. I mean, I will do Moths wherever I'm asked, but I have to say, if someone hasn't had it now, they've been pretty slow to catch on. Although I'm always happy to go abroad again to maybe places that haven't had it, but I have been to New Zealand, I've been to 3 different parts of the States, and I've been to Canada. I missed out Australia. That was a calculated thing. We could have done that when we went to New Zealand, but decided not to because I was a bit too long away from home, really. So that was a shame. I think Moss should really probably not appear too often, but I'm not going to say never because I'm always happy to do it, and who knows? Maybe I'll start doing double bills.
So what venue are you doing? Are you doing Edinburgh then? So people know.
Oh, lovely, good thinking. Because I'd be terrible at this sort of thing. You see, 3:10 at the Gilded Balloon TV at Gilded Balloon. So I'm just trying to think if it's got a particular name again. Is it the Gilded Balloon? I don't know, but the Gilded Balloon. It's in the Gilded Balloon. It's
that's all people need to know. It's 3:10 at the Gilded Balloon. That's what they need to know. So that's
and it's an hour long, so it's plenty of time to see my show, have a bit of summer, and then go and see comedians off the telly who are all doing the sort of 6, 7, 8 o'clock shows. And I didn't see the need to compete with them because mine's probably an altogether gentler affair. Well, it will be. It will be fun. I will be shouting a lot, but it won't be sort of, it won't be sweary and it won't be sexy.
I went to see your show at Edinburgh about the BBC. Have you got any plans to do that anyway again?
No, but that's been very useful because I've been turning the material into some prose that I've written. So watch this space for that. I tried to do a bit more writing, if I'm honest, Ian, because I've been ill, and as a result of that, I actually spent more time at home than I usually do, and it made me realise that I'm sort of missing home and travelling around far too much. So I'm concentrating on writing at the moment and rather enjoying it, having always been a bit of a reluctant writer. So I'm trying to get in the mindset to do that. So no, BBC might have been it might turn into something else, not by the BBC themselves, but there has been interest in turning that into an audio production.
Right.
I hadn't even considered. Well, I talked to around the BBC and they were very nice, but you can't really do this. then a suggestion came from an unexpected quarter, but I don't want to jinx it because I've not even said yes properly to them. I must get, sure. It reminds me, I must get back to them. There's life in that old dog as well. I mean, you know, I'm juggling. Don't juggle plates, do you? Spin plates. No, damn it, I'm going to juggle plates. I'm juggling plates of comedy.
And the final question I was going to ask you as well, because it links, I'm doing a bit of a Tom Baker retrospective. So, in your opinion, just at this moment, because it'll change by 8 o'clock, but in your opinion, what's your favourite Tom Baker cereal then?
Oh, can I only choose one?
You can have two, I'll be nice, you can have two, yeah.
Give me then Talons and Seeds of Doom.
Nice. Does it change a lot for you, or are you pretty set with that?
No, I could have thrown in Genesis, Deadly Assassin, Robots. I'm a big Hinchcliffe and Holmes fan, although I also... there are great examples in under the other producers as well. I think there's plenty to enjoy in season in any of the other seasons. I think Hinchcliffe and Holmes is the most consistently strong period of the show's history, though, in terms of synthesis of scripting, direction, design.
Is there any Tom Baker's that you don't watch that much that you kind of you're not really a fan of?
Revenge of the Cybermen sticks out of the Hinchcliffe
era, really?
like a very sore thumb, I think. Yeah, it's got a ludicrous cyber leader, played by Christopher Robbie, who an ex of mine saw understudy for Robert Stevens as King Lear, where apparently the marvelous Robin made them all cry. So. He's a capable actor, but quite right, he decided to play the cyber leader as a hands-on, hip-thrusting American. I have no idea. I think Revenge really doesn't work for me. I like most Doctor Who, but I'm just editing Running Through Corridors Volume 2, and Season 17 is quite well. Horns of Nymon isn't very good. Creep from the Pit isn't very good. When they're not it's a difficult for me to get into the mindset to slag them off because I've just been editing a thing where the mindset is to accentuate the positive. But I do think there's good stuff you can find to say about most Doctor Who stories. But Tom Baker's got as Underworld. Oh dear, that just has me and Rob going. Well, I can't think of anything to say about it. I mean, it's not so much bad as it's almost non-existent. It's just. Nobody seems to be making a television program. They seem to be all just trying to. It's exercising telling you what's happened. Tom Baker's got. Oh, and then the Invasion of Time. My goodness, that's got about two good episodes. And the rest of it is with Eric Deadman as the Cockney Santaran and the Scottish Arden. Now, there's no reason an alien shouldn't be Scottish. There is a reason he shouldn't be. Scottish tinfoil that can't act. And it has to be said, Tom Baker himself is responsible sometimes for serials falling apart around him because it often depends how people are reacting to him. So if he's prattling about and other people try to keep up, he's good at prattling about because he's funny and eccentric and otherworldly. When other people try to do it, quite often they just end up looking dark. Then sometimes people play it dead straight against him and they earn his respect, John Arnott in Invasion of Time, for example. But that also means sometimes directorially they decide to do dark things as well. I think if there's a weaker director, I think, you know, if Tom had said at that point, I think I should have a talk to Babbage, they might have said yes. So, yeah, it's up and down. Tom, like every era, Tom Baker has his troubles.
Well, I only watched Underworld for the first time the other week, and obviously when you've never seen something, you're thinking, oh, it's going to be good, and then I was like, it just didn't really grab us, and I was, you know, when you kind of, sometimes you go through with, say, all four episodes, and you blast through them, and then other times, it takes a lot to get through them, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, just, yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, every episode can't be amazing, you know.
No. As I say, with every Doctor Who story, there's particularly like Underworld, but it doesn't mean I'm never going to watch it again. There will be one night, maybe not for a while, but in 10 years' time, where my wife's out and nothing on the telly, and I've got a bottle of Chablis in front of me, and I might go, "Oh, go on, give Underworld a spin."
But everyone should catch you at Edinburgh Festival, and you're obviously doing preview shows, so if you check out your website for that as well.
Yeah, they're all up.
And I'm sure I'll bump in. I'll definitely come to see your show at Edinburgh, and I wish you well and take care, all right? Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. Nice
Okay,
talking
take
to you.
care. Bye. Bye.
Cheers, mate.
One of the first Tolkien novels I read was Horror Fangnought, which is the first episode in this series. And to be honest with you, I enjoyed, but I imagined it better when I read the Tolkien novel. Strange.
It's weird. Horror as the first for me. Horror Fangnought was the first classic DVD that I bought, and I love it.
It's good.
This is one of the other ones that I managed to get the chance to watch like the other day.
Yeah.
And I absolutely adore it. Like the model shots that are kind of obviously models. There's that brilliant, the little TARDIS, and then there's the wee like lighthouse in the background of that. But yeah, brilliant atmosphere. A superb example of Tom Baker just making up complete bollocks, as I believe he was wont to do. That whole thing about the chameleon effect, or also called lycanthropy. I believe that was a tomball. I believe that was something that he kind of put in.
All right,
on top
wow,
of the script, yeah. But,
I also like that claustrophobicness of Doctor Who, where it's all kind of just set in a small little space, and it doesn't suffer from that either, you know.
No, it's a brilliant kind of, but yeah, it's all set in one column of brick, isn't it, basically? It's set in a lighthouse. It's fantastic. Really great set. A fantastic bit where Leela clouts some woman for being kind of, well, just kind of, it's a real insight into her character. She just really does not have a lot of time for the standard girly antics of the day. Just as confused by how, you know, how women are seen and how women are treated and how they're supposed to behave. So she just gets frustrated with her and clouts her, which is an awesome moment. And again, she basically decides that she's going to nick one of the lighthouse keepers' outfits.
So the Rutans, and they're the enemies of the Sontarans, aren't they?
Yes, yeah, this is first hint of the Rutan-Sontaran war.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is did the Rutans turn up again ever? I can't remember.
Are they not in Invasion of Time in some space, in some way?
Let's have a look, see, I can't remember. That's one of the other ones, yeah. The Sontarans definitely do, because that's basically
I'm pretty sure the Rutans kind of emerge in some form in that, but... Yeah, they're quite interesting. It was nice kind of link and stuff. And I think Doctor Who does the kind of period sort of drama, early 20th century sort of thing very well as well. So
yeah,
I think they revel in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The next one, I can't remember if I've seen it. I'm pretty sure I saw it on UK drama or something there, The Invisible Enemy.
This is where some people argue that the shark is starting to be jumped a little bit. This is the first appearance of K-9.
Yes.
And it's basically, yeah, I believe this is where the Doctor and Leela are shrunk. There's some kind of shrinky-dink Fantastic Voyage kind of antics.
Oh, yes, I do remember the shrinking.
And part of it happen in the Doctor's head or somebody else's head? I can't remember, but it's like part of it happens in the mind of a person.
Oh, yeah, it's starting to ring a bell now. Yeah, I was a bit like, after Hazardous voyage through his mind, the Doctor's clone and Leela's clone are separated. Yeah, so there's journeys through minds and whatnot.
Most shows should have literal journeys through minds, I think. Coronation Street, perhaps, would be good. Just going to Norris's mind, that'd be good.
Oh God!
suspicion.
but you know, I do like K-9. You know, and I wouldn't name a podcast like the Tin Dog did after him. I do like him. You know, but there's certain things where K-9 really shouldn't be, and especially I'm trying to think that there was one of the ones that were quite late on in the Baker era, and he was just trying to go around this kind of swamp and stuff, and he kept going around the sides and stuff.
Oh,
it was somewhere around Full Circle. Circle, and I was a bit like, oh, you shouldn't be here.
Loads of stuff where they just ended up having to leave him in the... It's like leaving your dog in the car, isn't it? They had to leave him in the TARDIS or something for a little bit. I mean, eventually he'd pop out, but like, it just seemed like too much of an encumbrance. But I'm a big fan of K-9 and Company, weirdly. Especially how he must have got up on that dry stone wall in the titles. That's amazing. Must have levitated like the Australian one. But yeah, I can kind of see the problems with it. It's fun, and he's iconic.
Yeah, oh yeah,
it's definitely
yeah.
iconic in that, but I can't say I entirely enjoy the character all the time.
The thing is, with this is an era where I've kind of seen some bits and I haven't seen other bits. It's kind of it's quite a strange era. Like Image of Fendal, I can't work out if I have seen it or not.
Oh, Image of the Fendal is like kind of one of my favourite kinds of Doctor Who story, where it's big science and big monsters kind of looking like really old magic. And this is kind of the last of the really horror-tinged ones. And it's got Sherlock's mum in it. Fact. Yeah, Wanda Ventum is Benedict Cumberbatch's mum.
Oh, yes, I've just seen that, yeah.
And if you look at them, he's got her eyes.
He's stolen them?
What? Yes, out of her face. Strapped them onto his own. That's how he jumped off the building in the last episode, using his mother's eyes to land on.
Yeah, it's... I don't think I've got on DVD, so
Man, it's great. It's great fun. It's got Don Brennan from Corrie in it.
Don, wow. Yeah.
I think Charlie Slater's in it from EastEnders. And Dennis Little, Cassandra's dad from Fools and Horses, plays a Swiss villain.
A Swiss villain?
He's a Swiss villain. He's a Swiss professor lad. Basically it revolves around this skull that they find. That seems to predate. It's a human skull, but the dating of it seems to predate the first officially acknowledged appearance of the human race, thus creating a paradox. But it's got like a big. It's brilliant. There's a pentangle in the top of it. And there's some proper horror stuff in this, which I'm surprised I could get away with. So I mean, slight tangent. I used to work at a bookshop. And I used to, for some reason, they gave me the mind, body, and spirit section to look after. It was around about the time of Buffy, so there was lots of books on witchcraft.
Mm.
That was very popular, people being a witch, like Willow or something. And we got awful tellings off from the local Christian groups because there was loads of them had pentangles on them, because, of course, it's an old pagan symbol. Not necessarily Satanism, but the public's association of the pentangle is devil worship and Dennis Wheatley stuff. So, yeah, there's a bit towards the end where a golden wand of Ventum is standing in a big pentangle, which is quite tasty for Saturday tea time, really.
Yeah.
Kind of proper horror stuff. I mean, given that particular symbol we used to put the willies up a lot of people, you know, again, surprised they got away with it. But I think that was really the last time, perhaps until Full Circle, State of Decay, where they really kind of visited the horror stuff.
Hmm.
But yeah, I love it.
The next two, I think I've got on my Amazon wishlist in this box set, which is, it seemed to me when it was released, the box set, this is it's a bit shit.
Yeah.
But, we're going to try and put them all together.
To be fair, I mean, The Sunmakers is a kind of a light satirical story. It's Bob Holmes, and I can't remember the name of the guy in it, but it's got a fabulous kind of creepy worm-like turn from some guy who's basically an alien accountant. Alien taxman, but I think the root of the story is that Bob Holmes had some trouble with the taxman, so he wrote a kind of a satire on it. And there's a massive credit card or something that looked exactly like a Visa card did at the time, something like that. There's some problem with that. It's fun. It's basically and Leela threatens to kill everybody again at one point. Fantastic, good girl. So, yeah, it's fun, but it's not brilliant. But Underworld, yeah, that's in the Time Monster box set, isn't it? And you're quite right, it's a case of two entertained sneaking out a couple of stories that couldn't sell on their own, really, because it's not very good.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I did have it on the list, and I was thinking, oh, I'm intrigued to see what this is like, because it's like the other week I was saying I watched Timelash, you know, I want to know, it wasn't as bad as I thought, to be honest with you. I thought it was going to be a lot worse.
But I think it's a reputation of Timelash, it's that, you know, it would have to be actually pretty abysmal to live up to it.
Very shoddy. Yeah.
If you go to it, though, because I still haven't seen it, I'm still slightly afraid of it, to be honest. Like much, unfortunately, for the Six Doctors, I haven't really seen a lot of it because I've just come out of it. But yeah, if you go to it with those lower expectations, I'd imagine it's actually probably not as bad as you would have imagined it would be. The Twin Dilemma, which is unquestionably shit. But yeah, Underworld's like another. It's basic Greek myths, isn't it? and there's some kind of like vague time with Gallifreyan history. This is another race that the Gallifreyans had messed about with in the way that the Gallifreyans did.
It's not really grabbing you as much this season, is it? It's kind of a bit...
No, this is the kind of, it's the point where it sort of starts to feel like it's kind of tipped over. But yeah, with the exception of Fangrock, which is a corker of an opener, and the image of the Fendal, not great. Not a great season overall.
Invasion of Time, I've got that, and I've mentioned it to someone, I don't know if it was Harry or not, but I quite enjoyed it just because it had that bizarre kind of like big twist in the middle of it.
Mm.
I won't spoil it for anyone, but it's quite an interesting twist.
Mm.
But yeah, over six episodes, I imagine it'd be a bit like, a bit boring for people.
It seemed a little bit stretched. Like going back to Leela, the way that they, cause it was Louise Jameson's last story, like all of a sudden, it suddenly turns out I'm like in love with this character that's just been kind of like, you know, had barely any build up to this. Oh, and I'm staying on Gallifrey and getting married to him all of a sudden. Really?
They don't seem to do that very well when the married comedians or married companions are going, what the hell, that's...
Yeah, they're really shit at those comedy weddings.
Yeah. Oh, and Doctor Who, they're always trying to get the comedians.
Yeah, the Frank Carson and Faith Brown, trying to get them hits. Christ, that was scary visuals of the wedding night, actually. Good.
But apart from the Green Death, I think they always kind of slightly mess it up. You know,
I think it's symptomatic of the relative, my only, it's not a massive criticism of the old show compared to the new show. The new show seems a little bit more sophisticated in its treatment of relationships and emotions because it had to get over the, and to kind of reflect the way that TV changed, it had to do drama properly. But yeah, the Green Death, it's touching in its way, but it's like, again, it's like all of a sudden people are like completely in love with each other, where it's like, really? And actually the most affecting bit of the Green Death is obviously three chugging away in, sounds like he's whacking off. it's John Pertwee masturbating the cape, or driving off in Bessie, so I was going to say. So yeah, there is a kind of a real, that really tugs at the heartstrings, but just like all of a sudden Joe Grant is interested in this bloke that invented corn. No, same here with Andred and Leela, just kind of doesn't really fit, don't know. But
yes, it seems quite a bit of a limp ending for her, isn't it, you know.
And Rodan, she seemed like she was being set up as a kind of a, because I believe that's the first time we saw a time lady or a female Gallifreyan in the show. It was the first time I remember really taking any notice. And like, it's
when I just clicked on her, by the way, for her name, Hilary Ryan Roden, right?
Yeah.
And it said no page. There's no article on her. So what? you know, she could have had something.
She was awesome. I really liked Rodan. I thought she would have been a really, really good companion.
They do that a lot, don't they, just before? I think they're almost kind of hedging their bets, don't they?
Yeah, they kind of put a couple that potentially might, and if they kind of see some... But yeah, like, they basically, yeah, they kind of seem to line a few of them up, and then we see, who's that? You know, one of them might be. But yeah, I thought Rodan would have been... She kind of seemed like a proto-Romana. And maybe that's maybe the direction they're heading. Well, yeah, of course they're heading in that direction.
It's the season after this. Next season was obviously quite a risky thing in a sense, because you've obviously got a massive kind of, it's not even a massive arc, it's the biggest arc ever in terms of Doctor Who up to that point.
Well, they just had done that, and given that it was like these are series of like 26 odd episodes, weren't they? Admittedly, like 25 minutes at a time, so I think somebody did the maths and it roughly ends up about the same amount of minutes of Doctor Who, but that's a 26 week story, which I don't even think shows in the States would.
No, it's true. It's probably longer than what they would do now, because it's only about 23 or something doing America, don't they?
Yeah, pretty much. They used to be 26. That's 6 months. That's 6 months. That's mad.
Madness.
Yeah,
it is mad. But in evaluation, season 15, are you a fan? Do you think it's kind of transitional? Or
I think it's kind of slightly transitional. I'm a fan because I'm a big Leela fan. And so, yeah, I like it, but that I have to admit, looking at them all in a row, all of the stories, they do slightly pale in comparison to the previous season, which is an absolute corker, probably one of the strongest the show ever had. And, yeah, corky opener, slightly damp squib of a closer, some cool stuff along the way, and some brilliant character stuff. Yeah, perhaps I think they got started getting to the kind of the with the companion character where she just ended up being like cornered and started screaming again. Even though this is, you know, this character was extraordinarily like physically capable of beating the crap out of anyone, and often would. It just seemed like they still couldn't quite get past the whole paradigm of the companion being the person that screams and the doctor goes and rescues them. But there were some interesting kind of attempts to move away from that along there. And just maybe the writing was botched. I understand that at the time Tom wasn't massively enamoured with the what Louise Jameson was doing, so that probably kind of came through. This isn't the same like chemistry that there is with Sarah Jane and would later be with Romana too. But I don't know if that had something to do with it as well. But yeah, it sort of felt like they kind of got shot of her in a bit of a slightly unfitting kind of way. I don't know. That's all speculation.
I think Tom Baker was very powerful, and I think still is, during the sense of that he's, if he wants something changed, he'd be like, I want it changed, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's the sort of person who kind of be quite quiet about his thoughts.
No. And the question is like, really, is that right? Yeah, I mean, he's Tom. This is the problem, Tom. And I guess still now, you ask somebody of a certain age, you know, who do you think of when you think of Doctor Who? When you think of the Doctor, I mean, and a lot of people will still answer, you know, floppy hat, curly hair, big scarf, and so
he's the iconic one, isn't he?
Well, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Completely yeah. Iconic. And you know, he had the role for what was it, 7 years, something like that. It was a very long time. But was he there too long, and did he get too powerful? Because it ended up, like, I'll still watch them. I will still watch all of the Fourth Doctor episodes, because even the J&T ones, which, you know, Corner was turned by that point in certain respects. But you kind of get the sense that maybe he had a little bit too much influence, and really that he should perhaps have been reined in a little bit, just for the sake of the show, you know?
Yeah.
But they
get the companion right the next season, in the sense of actually get someone who's an equal, so that's good.
Yes, you know, it's somebody for the first time he's like he's put in as intellectually as able as the Doctor. Maybe not as sophisticated in terms of her experience of life and that, because she's straight from the Academy, isn't she? She just lands in the TARDIS. And actually, again, with the first Romana, they ended up going back to. No, it's first few episodes. She's you know, really sort of sparky in that, and then she ends up just screaming at stuff. It's a bit crap, really.
How can people find out about you? How can they tweet you in there?
Yeah, I'm on the Twitter at DannyDavies23.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm only 23.
Hey, I'm 82, so I'm fucked.
Yeah, it's with the generation gap. there's me blog website thing at www.thedannydavies.co.uk, and there's also Soldiers of Tangent, what I do with Marty Perry, Ellen Marty, which is at www.soldiersoftangent.co.uk.
Mundus podcast.